Today on Straight Talk Africa, we analyze and reflect on the 29th African Union Summit. It was dominated by discussions aimed at ending ongoing conflicts and making the institutions more relevant to the concerns and needs of its youth. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
Hello, Shaka, and to all of our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere, I'm Hayley Adams-Fitzpatrick, in for Ian Bior today as your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion on some highlights regarding last week's 29th session of the African Union Summit held in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
And coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook and Twitter comments, and we'll reveal some of them. And that's just ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
Peace and security and the need for less reliance on foreign donors were some of the key issues discussed during last week's African Union Summit. My colleague Paul Sisco has more.
They came. They sang. They talked, they listened, talked some more, and left. The two-day 29th biannual African Union Summit concluded last week at the organization's Chinese-built headquarters in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. AU chairperson Musa Faki Mahamat opened the gathering by saying the reforms report, compiled by Rwandan President Paul Kagame, is the first concern. The assembly has adopted more than 1,500 resolutions, he said. Yet there is no easy way to determine how many of those have actually been implemented. As a result, we have a dysfunctional organization with limited credibility among member states, global partners, and citizens alike. In his push for AU members to have greater self-sufficiency, Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe presented a $1 million donation to the continental body. 60% of the AU budget comes from the European Union, the World Bank, the United States, and other foreign donors. Few African nations have paid their full share of the $782 million annual budget. Many of them are behind and simply cannot pay off their debt. Chairman Mahamat says peace and silencing the guns by 2020 is the second area of concern, followed by humanitarian relief for the victims of drought, famine, and forced displacement. The fourth priority Mahamat identifies as development and implementing projects benefiting the African people. He also emphasized the need for the AU to speak as one voice, making it easier to trade and travel across the continent. Additionally, he called for more general cooperation between the member states. AU leaders also discussed and emphasized the need for countries to invest in their youth. Deputy Secretary General of the United Nations, Amina Mohammed, told the summit members, investing in our youth will reap dividends for our future. Most of the conference discussion centered on peace and security issues, with South Sudan, Somalia, Libya, the Central African Republic at the forefront. Members discussed the fragile relations between Djibouti and Eritrea, application of the peace accords in Mali, and the continuing terrorism threat in Mali and worldwide. Chairman Mahamat says uncertain politics, naming the Democratic Republic of Congo, Burundi, and Guinea-Bissau, are also immediate concerns. Paul Sisco, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Emira Woods, Africans Rising for Justice, Peace, and Dignity, an international working group member, and Ruth Muok Tang, former South Sudanese Member of Parliament. And we invited Dr. Arikana Chomboli Kao, the African Union Ambassador to the United States, but due to last-minute scheduling conflict, she could not participate in today's program. Well, I have to say once again, Emira and Ruth, that is always, of course, a pleasure to have you on this program.
Well, it's a pleasure and an honor to be with you.
Thank you very much, Shaka.
You're most welcome. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. Emira, you obviously, you watched, you read, your feelings about last week's 29th summit of the African Union.
Shaka, in a word, dismay.
Wow. You know,
we come together twice a year to really, you know, as a continent, put forward an agenda for the continent. And we see that, you know, there was a lot of rhetoric, but we don't really see what's needed to actually push the African Union to realize the potential that it has. You know, back in 2001, when the African Union was established, many of us applauded. We said, hooray, we're done with the Organization of African Union, which is a club of heads of state. And we applauded an African Union which put forward issues like, you know, a Pan-African parliament that would be representative of the entire continent, that would have women fully represented as full legislatures of that parliament. But what we have seen now, you know, again, 16 years later, is we really have not fully recognized the potential of the African Union.
So you really think that it was more of the same?
More of the same, unfortunately. And you see the critical elements. You have an African Union that is 60% paid for by external actors, right? There has been discussion for quite some time about an enforcement mechanism where members would actually pay their dues. Many of these countries pay their dues to the United Nations, but don't necessarily to the African Union, without actually controlling the destiny, the finances of the African Union, it will continue to be controlled by outside interests. And I think it will not be able to fully recognize its potential.
So when you talk about how more than 60% is actually funded by foreign donors, what about the contribution by Zimbabwean President Robert Gabriel Mugabe, $1 million?
Well, I think it was an interesting gesture. He sold cows, right?
Yes.
An interesting gesture.
He auctioned the cows.
We've got to, we've got to do our own. But there's so much more. We have a continent that is at the epicenter of the climate catastrophe. With climate change impacting the entire world, but especially the African continent, we've got to be able to have taxation in a way that will tax particularly fossil fuels, as well as extractive industries, in a way that will generate revenue for the continent. These proposals of taxation not only on extractive industries, but also on weapons flooding into the continent, where crises like South Sudan and many other areas are at the epicenter, right? You know, these proposals have been around for quite some time, but never really enforced, never really implemented. And until we are bold enough and courageous enough to not just talk, you know, have the rhetoric, but to have actions that flow from that rhetoric, we will continue to have more of the same.
Very interesting. You know, Ruth, what about you? You happen to come from South Sudan, and it happens to be one of those countries obviously undergoing conflict, and the institution talks about, of course, figuring out a way, strategizing out a way of resolving conflicts, including your country.
Well, thank you very much, Chaka, once again. To add my voice to my colleague, actually the inbound of the African Union was very promising. The fact that it was formed based on the principle of integrating the continent and working for global economic prevention of the war and conflict and resolving conflict and keeping the peace and stability in Africa. And to say this, the African Union have failed in doing the thing that were core of its formation. In fact, if you look at Africa right now, the whole continent is at war by itself, with itself. And
what do you mean the whole continent is at war with itself?
Well, in East Africa right now, there is war. You know, Somalia is a war, and South Sudan is war. You know, you go to Central Africa, you go to Central African Republic, you go to Congo, you go to West Africa in Mali. There is no place in Africa where there is no war. And you have a body that is functioning that was formed to solve all those problems. And what can you expect from African Union right now? You don't have to expect anything because they have failed. There is no peace and security whereby you will talk of development and the other thing that you want to do at an organization. First of all, they have to resolve the conflict, but they are not resolving the conflict, especially in the case of South Sudan. The African Union have failed resolve the conflict in South Sudan. The East African failed to resolve the conflict in South Sudan, and they are all part of the African Union.
IGAD,
for example. and the conflict of South Sudan is an example that shows that African Union is just a body that is a skeleton that has nothing that we expect out from it. Nothing will actually come out from the African Union. This is my belief.
What do you think it should do in order at least to be seen to be more relevant to the African people as opposed to the perception that the current arrangement, frankly, is simply a club of African rulers, others in fact say dictators, because most of them really are undemocratic?
Uh-huh. Well, you know, it is very clear why the African Union, the AU, was formed. You know, it work is supposed to bring the African together, to unite the whole continent, and to keep peace and security in the continent. And this thing, these are the primary thing that we are looking for, are the people of Africa. Because without peace, you will not have the development that we need. Because Africa now is aspiring to, you know, to grow economically and compete with all the part of the world. But how are we going to compete while we are just busy killing ourselves?
Can you, in fact, have peace without leaders and countries, in fact, adopting the principle of social, economic justice for all?
You cannot have peace, and that's why I'm saying, you know, the African Union is not actually seeing it all, because there are a bunch of, you know, dictators who are coming together in the name of their leaders, for example, and they are not even leading their people in the right way. For example, if the African leaders are good in leading their own country, they may talk about making African Union a good thing, or maybe a thing that can change the continent for the better. But they are not good in their respective state. So when they are in African Union, one is coming to protect himself, not to be, you know, blamed because they are killing people, they are violating human rights, they are not developing young people, for example. They are not, you know, promoting equality with women, for example. And they're just coming to African Union to make sure that they convene their colleague to not talk about the problem that they are facing. I was watching a YouTube clip by the former president of South Africa, Mbeki. And he was saying a very critical point.
He had the distinction, in fact, I think, of being in charge of the origin, in fact, mm-hmm. of the African Union back in 2002 in Durban, South Africa.
Yeah, and he was saying in that YouTube video that, you know, we are afraid, we're shy of correcting ourselves. How can we move Africa ahead, you know, and make it a better place for the African people? Because if I mess up in South Africa, people like Paul Kagame should come and talk to me and telling me, look, you are doing wrong thing. Let's blame ourselves as the leader, so that if we correct our mistake, and then we will be able to lead our country in a better way, and we will be able to form an African Union that will reflect, you know, the aspiration of the African people.
Really? So we also had, of course, about 6 months ago, another summit of the African Union in the Rwandan capital, Kigali. Did you hear any differences in the rhetoric, or is it really about perhaps cut and paste?
Well, it does seem quite a lot of the cut and paste, you know, and I think what we see, particularly now, you have, you know, heads of state that are changing their constitution to run for third terms and to stay in office indefinitely. And, you know, so, you know, you have a peer review mechanism set up by the African Union that, quite frankly, is not working.
What's wrong with changing constitutions, especially, as they say, they are changing those constitutions illegally?
Well, they are constraining the political space. They are repressing the voice of the people. And I think we have examples of, you know, why that's the wrong way to go from throughout the continent, from Egypt all the way through, you know, to South Africa, right? So we have also examples of what can work. The regional body, ECOWAS, Economic Community of West African States, when the elections happened in the Gambia, ECOWAS was very firm in saying that, you know, the will of the people should be respected. Civil society.
We'll come back to that. And in fact, that was a very interesting scenario. Before we pause for a short break, we want to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now streaming on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa and watch our show live. And don't forget to share it with your friends. Also, we are on Twitter and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA African Union Summit. We'll put some of your tweets on air later in the show. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Well, I'm really sorry, Emira, I had to inject when you really wanted to make your point. I hope you find some space in your beautiful Liberian heart. Forgive me for that.
Never a need to forgive you, Shaka. All understood.
Speak up for where you stopped.
Yeah, well, the example of West Africa, right? ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States. In the instance of the Gambia, ECOWAS put forward principles to respect the will of the people. In fact, civil society came together in a movement called Gambia Has Decided. Mm-hmm. And so ECOWAS, the regional body, stood with the people, did the right thing, and demanded that the will of the people be heard. The African Union can and should be playing a similar role for the continent. Where there are issues around the continent, whether it's Democratic Republic of the Congo, where today you have young leaders that are in military prisons and, with their lives under threat because they are trying to push forward a democratic space in their country, the African Union should be playing a much more visible role in respecting the rule of law, respecting constitutions, and respecting the will of the people across all the 55 countries on the continent. I think that is the potential that is there that has not been realized.
Very interesting. Reith, you obviously heard Emira talk about the key role that was played by ECOWAS, a regional grouping, and in fact, the African Union basically supported or endorsed precisely what that regional grouping said. What about the issue of IGAD? Where is IGAD? Is it in fact missing in action or what?
Well,
in as far as at least the issue of South Sudan is concerned.
I think the East African, the West African community have done a very good, has shown a very good example to the rest of Africa to follow, like what they did in Gambia, for example. The problem of South Sudan is one of examples that show that the IGAD is just another, fake organization that will never solve problem in the East African community, like we are talking about the African Union.
What do you mean fake?
It's fake
Come
because,
on,
a simple example, I call it simple conflict of South Sudan because the conflict in South Sudan is very clear, but the African, the East African community, the IGAD, they are not showing leadership by intervening to solve the problem of South Sudan. They divide themselves, Museveni in the other side supporting the government fighting, and he's fighting on the table. He wants to be the one mediating the people of South Sudan, while his armed forces are fighting on the ground. And the rest of African leaders are not talking to Museveni, actually. They are not telling him that what you are doing.
Really?
Yeah, they are not talking to him.
What do you mean they are
because
not talking
Museveni,
to
Because Museveni, in every meeting of the IGAD, is dominated, and his idea is the one that is going on the table about South Sudan, while he's in the front fighting.
What about others who say, in this particular case, he's probably playing, these are their words, not mine, the role of Nyampala, which pretty much in Kiswahili really means like a supervisor, a foreman, an overseer of sorts of certain foreign interests.
Well, this is a good way to say Nyampala, Nyampara or Nyampala. I think the East African leaders, they are not up to their role. They fail in South Sudan. And I don't have a hope that they will bring peace into South Sudan. Not only in South Sudan, they fail into their respective country. There are things that people do not talk about now in East Africa.
For example?
There is no security, even in Ethiopia. The people of Ethiopia now are suffering. Youths are not having jobs.
Is there social economic justice
there is
for
no,
the people
there? There is no social economic justice at all. You know, you go to Uganda also, youths are jobless. Nobody talk about this. And they have issues that they can resolve, you know, right into their own country. And they are coming here with you know, I believe that we need to change. Africa need to change. And this is where I want to encourage the young people, especially the young people in Africa in general.
You are a young man. In fact, you are a member of parliament representing the youth in your country.
Yes, I represent youth in the parliament. And I stand my ground in the parliament. I talk to the leadership to develop, you know, program for young people, to capacity build the youth and give them program, give them the headway, give them what they should do. Because if you don't support and develop the youth, they will tend to be negative force to the society. Because they will do things that young boy, for example, young adolescent boy, if they don't have any program that is placed in front of them by the government, they will tend to be doing crime. Like in the case of South Sudan, the young people in South Sudan, they are the most people who are suffering right now. That is nobody that care about them. Nobody that talk about their own issues. Because we have a president that want to remain in power. And he surround himself with community members in trying to develop a hegemony of one tribe, for example. And there is nothing. I was just talking to one person recently, a young girl who had been my colleague at Juba University. She's now cannot work. A graduate of maybe 10 years, sitting in the house with a certificate in Juba.
Why is that
And one very bad thing that she told me is if she want to go to one of the oil company, for example, trying to look for a job, and the man told her that, you know, you are lucky because you are a woman.
Because we
can have relationship and then you get a job easy. These are the things that are happening to our youth.
Emira, how do you explain this? You have a country, certainly the newest country in the international community, a country that is incredibly rich in natural resources. And in fact, doesn't really have a lot of people. It should be in a position, in fact, of attracting more people to come over there and develop the country. They have oil, they have minerals, they have one of the most fertile lands that is not under cultivation. This a country could be the breadbasket, not only of the region, but also the Middle East. What happens?
Well, Chaka, there are a couple of things happening. First, you have the dominance of particularly oil companies that have been operating in South Sudan since before the country became independent. They are calling the shots, to be quite frank. People do not have an opportunity to determine their own future because the money, the profits, the power goes to these oil companies. And beyond that, you have leaders that are very short-sighted, that are looking to enrich themselves and their both and also their expand their power at the costs, unfortunately, of both current and future generations. So this is like a deadly mix whereby young people, particularly when you describe this situation for women, you know, that are rendered invisible, that have very limited opportunities, and are pushed even further to the brink in the midst of such wealth. So I think the lesson really is that an African Union needs to support and strengthen its people, to recognize the enormous possibility, particularly of creative young minds. It is young people that are pushing forward principles of democracy from DR Congo to South Africa, South Sudan, but also Senegal, across the continent. You have these movements of young people. Many of them now are part of this exciting network of Africans Rising for Justice, Peace, and Dignity. It is young people in the leadership visioning a future Africa where the political interests serve the needs of the people, where the civil society, trade unions, environmental justice groups, women's organizations have an opportunity to really set the agenda for our political and economic future. And I think it is those forces that need greater space. So when we talk about the African Union and we talk about things like a Pan-African parliament, the possibility of a Pan-African parliament is to have a proper legislative body that is representative of the entire continent, that has women, that has civil society, that is setting the agenda for the continent. And so that from the bottom up, you're able to vision the Africa that we need, a strong economy that works for its people, as well as a political space where the rule of law is respected and the will of the people can actually be honored.
So who does that current African parliament based in Midland, South Africa, represent? Does it represent the people, or in fact, does it represent the rulers who appoint them to that particular parliament?
Well, in fact, you have groups like Africans Rising for Justice, Peace, and Dignity that put forward reforms of the African Union, including this one, that the legislative body be given teeth, you know, be real, not just a paper body, right? And so
and
you
teeth
have
that
many,
can bite.
Teeth that can bite. You have many on the continent that are saying we need these organizations to actually have the muscle, right, to go beyond words on a paper, to realize their full potential. And so it's teeth that can bite, both for a Pan-African parliament, but also for an accountability mechanism whereby, you know, violations of human rights, violations of women's rights and mass atrocities on the continent are actually those people who are violating those crimes against humanity are held accountable on the continent as well as internationally.
Very interesting. Lisa, I was watching a clip, and it was on one very interesting Pan-Africanist intellectual, Professor P.L.O. Lumumba from Kenya. And he argued that if you look across the African continent, that the majority of the countries are ruled by individuals who have power but no ideas, and that the people who actually have ideas do not have power. Do you agree with him?
I completely agree with him.
For example?
For example, Salva Kiir of South Sudan. You have a country now where the economy is, the inflation is 900%. You know, in 2014, the dollar was, you know, you have $100, you have 300 South Sudanese pound, and then you get $100 equivalent to 300 South Sudanese pound. But right now you have 20,000 South Sudanese pound against $100. You know, the basic salary of the, you know, the last person in South Sudan is 500 pound. You know, a country like this.
You could say the same thing about Zimbabwean President Robert Gabriel Mugabe, mm-hmm. but the last time I checked, this guy is probably one of the most arguably educated leaders in the world. Degrees.
I believe so. And you know, that means degrees actually does not make you a leader. A leader has to be a natural leader, but education can add on to something. And coming back to South Sudan, now South Sudan, look at South Sudan. The soldier now, they don't have salary. And the commanders have to instruct the army to rape women so that they they confiscate what was supposed to be a payment for the military. And you have the president that is sitting in the parliament thinking that he has a country. You have, you know, more than 80% of the young people, they are just sitting with their certificate, no job. Let's say even if you get a job in
people
South Sudan.
They are fleeing to neighboring countries, the money that you get, to become refugees.
Exactly. Yeah, and
all the whole also Equatorial region, inside of the country were internally displaced.
The whole of Equatorial region, nobody. It's all been left for animal. The Upper Nile region, nobody. And the peace that the president and people and even the East African community are talking about is in Juba. Not the whole Juba has a capital, if you know Juba. It's the only J1 which is the palace,
the
where the president is staying. You go to the suburb of Juba, people are being killed, women are being raped. And this country now, the young people are feeling like they don't have a country. They're just sitting, waiting on the day they will die because they don't know what may happen tomorrow.
I'm afraid time is not our best ally. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away.
These youth are not just the next generation of African leaders. They are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect. Let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githiri-Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa live from Washington. It's time now to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Hayde Adams-Fitzpatrick. Take it away, Hayde.
Thank you, Shaka. The 29th biannual African Union Summit was held in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia last week. The summit was dominated by discussions on war and conflict, the situations in South Sudan, Somalia, Libya, and the Central African Republic were high on the agenda. Now, this leads us to our question of the week. And so we asked, what concerns and issues should be the top priority for the African Union? Well, before we begin, I would like to thank all of you for using all our social media platforms to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOA African Union Summit. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. Now to our comment of the week from Mohammed Ahmed Mansour in Liberia, who writes, the African Union should take a holistic and integrated approach to addressing the issues of peace and security on the continent. The organization should focus the attention of members to the importance of addressing the root causes of conflict, such as lack of development, high levels of poverty, inequitable access to resources, youth unemployment, climate change, and human rights abuses. It should also speed up the implementation of policies that prevent post-conflict countries from relapsing into violence. Let's go to another comment from our Facebook fan, Simon Ojore from Uganda, who writes, I think the African Union's top priority should be addressing issues of economic independence by broadening African markets. But that should be preceded by good governance, peace and stability across the continent. And that is a result of addressing Africa's political problems. And our last Facebook comment comes from William Kokulo in Liberia, who writes, the African Union should focus on having a single African agenda by having a single passport, a single currency, and promoting trade and agriculture among Africans instead of looking to the West, like China and other countries, for trade. Now, a reminder that we appreciate all of the audience feedback. Please do keep them coming. And if you are a new fan of the show, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address there is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comments on our Facebook page. Enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa interact with our show as it's streaming live. Also, be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel, sign up to VOA TV to Africa, and follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Now, a reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Simple as that. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on African elections. What makes a ballot credible? Some political observers say African elections are often merely selections. We'll tackle the difference on the next Straight Talk Africa. And that is all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and the guests obviously have a lot of social media comments to discuss, so I'll leave it to you. Over to you.
That is terrific, Heidi. Thank you so much for sharing with us some social media reaction from the African continent and, of course, the diaspora. Welcome back. And today, of course, we are discussing last week's African Union Summit. Our distinguished guests are Emira Woods, Africans Rising for Justice, Peace and Dignity, an international working group member, and Riek Mok-Tang, former South Sudanese Member of Parliament. We invited Dr. Arikana Chihomboli-Kao, the African Union Ambassador to the United States, but due to a late scheduling conflict, she could not participate in today's program. Well, I have to say, of course, Emira and Ruth, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity once again to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Well, the honor is ours, especially on such critical issues as we're discussing today.
Thanks. You're always welcome.
Thank you very much, Shaka.
You're always welcome. Your reaction, you had, of course, what Heidi shared with us, you know, some very interesting ideas from the continent and the African diaspora.
We are always grateful to see the voices of people who are weighing in, because I think critical issues like the economic crisis, economic inequality that is gripping, it came from a compatriot in Liberia, but it could have come from anywhere on the continent, the inequality. And when you see issues like the flow, the illicit flows of capital outside the continent, these have been issues long analyzed. There have been so many commissions that have reported on the need to stem the illicit flows outside the continent, how they have outstripped aid and trade combined. And so, you know, there are steps that the African Union can play to regain control of the economic well-being of the continent. So you think about the various categories of where work is needed. Clearly, it's political. To have organs like a Pan-African Parliament actually work in as a legislative body, to stem the repression that is actually closing off the political space in country after country, particularly those where presidents are trying to extend their rule and change the constitutions. The African Union can do this, huh? But economically, getting at the root causes, as the contributor from Liberia said, getting at the root causes to actually stop this flow of migrants coming out of the continent into any region they can to seek safe haven, right? I mean, it is getting control of the economy and putting the well-being of the people first, stopping the outflows, the illegal flows of resources outside the continent. Those are the steps that the African Union can do to begin to put in place really an organization that is seeking the interests of its people into the 21st century. And I have to say, Shaka, you know, we have now technology throughout the continent as an area where we are leapfrogging in many ways. So there are ways in which the voices like we're hearing today, the voices of the people, can be reflected to their leadership in a much more direct way. And those voices, I believe, are the solution to the crises in places like South Sudan, in places like Libya, that have such ripple effects throughout the continent.
Well, any particular reason, for example, why we do not have the type of leadership that reflect, for example, character, reflect ethics and morality, as opposed to asking people, for example, to have had 13 years of high school or university education and all that kind of stuff, while some of these leaders, in fact, majority of them, some people say, frankly, in their words again, not mine, are actually patriotic to their stomachs, the stomachs of their families and the stomachs of their friends, not to the community, not society. You don't even have to talk about the country. Your reaction?
Chaka, it's very unfortunate that the Africa is going through what it is going through. And my worry is, you know, when things happen and there seem to be no change at all, people get used to it. Like the issues of corruption that are happening, the issues of president trying to die in power or maybe giving relinquish power to their immediate family members, like their wife and their children. And now there is no headway. There seems to be no change. Nothing is changing in Africa. No leader is showing up.
What do you mean nothing is changing? I mean, no society, no individual is static. Everything we are told is dynamic. So how can you say there's no change, nothing is changing?
Well, to say that we are actually wondering why in Africa, no single country that we have to see a patriotic leader coming up, and then all the leaders are the same.
No, I think that their countries on the right track.
To be fair, we as a continent have had visionary leaders in the past, right?
No,
we have
no question
had
about it.
Patrice Lumumbas,
yes.
The Kwame Nkrumahs,
the Julius Kambarage Nyerere's,
exactly,
the Kenneth Kaundas of the world.
People,
yes,
right?
Yes.
We have had that.
Yes.
It isn't something that's foreign to us, right? Mm-hmm. But what we need to do is to remember the values that created many of those people. Mm-hmm. They came out of social movements, political movements. Mm-hmm. They represented the interests of their people. They put off in their own lives. Right?
Yes.
But in the back burner to put the interests of the people first. So we and often those leaders were taken from us. Let's be clear, right?
Yes.
The Sankaras
yes.
and others, they
true.
Were taken
That's
from us
true.
By the US, by the West.
By
right?
the Nyamparas,
exactly.
Like Blaise Compaoré.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So, and others were put in place and kept in place for decade after decade. Mm-hmm. So we've got to be able to recognize that we can mm-hmm. have mm-hmm. visionary mm-hmm. leadership again. Mm-hmm. But we also have to see where they are now.
And
right now, many
working.
Of them are in the social movements. They're in the trade unions. They're in the faith-based organizations. They're working for peace mm-hmm. across the continent. Mm-hmm. But they're not taking on the mantle of leadership because they feel like these issues of corruption, of accountability, of lack of respect for the rule of law are so endemic. And so they don't take on the possibility of formal political office in many instances. So we've got to create a space where the leaders that are visionary once more see these avenues, these organs, representative of the interests and the needs of the people and being able to step forward into those roles as well as the other non-formal roles.
So how does the African Rising actually see it? Because I was talking with your colleague who happens to be, I think, the chairman, Dr. Manai Du, and among other things, he even said, at least we should even be hearing our leaders or rulers talking about the Afro, since the European Union has the Euro. Mm. What about that?
Without a doubt, there's so many visionary ideas, right? A common currency, to have greater integration in terms of trade, to be able to fly, you know this well, from one country to the next, Anglophone, Francophone.
I know.
Have to often go outside the continent to come back,
right? Foreign in your own country.
Exactly. So to be able to have the opportunities where from telecommunications to infrastructure, we unleash the creativity of the continent. This is the potential. And I think right now what you're hearing is a bit of a frustration that the African Union isn't where it needs to be. It's not on the path that's going to get us the stronger Africa and the better world we so desperately need. And at the same time, we're here in Washington in the midst of a Trump administration that is pushing forward on its agenda, make America great again, right?
That's
and right
yeah.
now, this week, they're talking about Libya, sending in more weapons into Libya that will have severe consequences for the entire continent, not just for Libya. And so we need an African Union to step up, to be able to play its proper role, to seek the interests of the people, both politically, economically, and in terms of military and security as well.
Very interesting. A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. To participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. The US country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please, don't go away.
like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidiri Yuwat. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Reith, your comments.
Well, thanks again. You know, my concern is actually, you know, when you see things happening over and over again and there seem to be no headway, nothing is changing. Like the situation in Kenya, for example, there is that kind of leadership that is built based on community. You know, this big community and unite with this big community, they unite together to defeat the other communities. And these are the issues that frustrated me as somebody who's won Africa to be a different place. And
what do you mean when you say this community, that community? I thought that when you look at a country like Kenya, including yours really, we should probably look at it through the prism of two communities. One involves those who have and those who do not have. And those who do not have are the vast majority, almost in any country across the continent.
Like, across the
world. Across the world, indeed.
My point actually is, like, you know, like the case of Kikuyu in Kenya and Kalenji. There are a lot of communities, like Luo, for example, in Kenya, which they are actually being prevented by these two groups, and people are built up. And actually, this is where the young people are getting wrong, because they also follow the leader based on their tribal line. They don't come out as young people that stand their own and call for a country that they want to see.
Let me ask you a question. When you talk about tribal leaders, for example, what is a tribal leader really? Because when these leaders who come from certain tribes, if you want to, for us to use that terminology, these people, when they steal, they actually do not steal for their tribe. They steal for themselves. And their families.
That is true. I believe that. And actually, they are using their own tribal group to keep them into power, or maybe to keep them continue ruling the people. It's not because
they exploit their community.
For example, the case of South Sudan. You have now the Dinka being the target of all the South Sudanese. You know, the sentiment, if you see the sentiment that are coming out now from the whole South Sudan is against the Dinka. But the Dinka did not organize themselves as a community to fight all the communities. It is Salva Kiir who is exploiting Dinka. You know, the vulnerable youths who are living in there, because they are not providing education, they are still in the cattle camp. So Salva Kiir will go to them and tell them, now this is our fight, this is our leadership, this is the Dinka rule. Will you let it be taken by all the communities? I agree with you that they are not stealing for their communities, but they are exploiting them. And actually, it's because the youth also are not aware. This is why we need young people to stand independent, actually to support themselves. Young people can also across the board work together at the young African of the at the young African group to support each other. Like, for example, the youth in Africa can stand up now, support the youth of South Sudan who is stuck. There is no headway in a country where the leader is not seeing tomorrow. He's just seeing today. Sitting in his palace, he's not caring even about the youth.
So, as
in
a
Kenya, for example,
member of parliament representing the youth, really, if you were to look in one of these cameras and talk directly to the youth of Africa, what is it, frankly, that you think is very important that you would share with them for them to become socially and politically aware, to know what their power is and what their options are, without necessarily resorting, for example, to violence? without resorting to AK-47?
I would tell the youth in Africa that they need to create a vision, their own vision. And that vision is to create the Africa that they want to see today and the Africa they want to be a part of 5 years to come or 10 years to come or maybe 100 years to come. They need to work together. They need to fight the injustice. You know, they need to fight corruption. They need to work together in you know, telling their government, you know, not to support, you know, all the government that are killing their own people. Like, for example, the government of South Sudan is killing their own people and being supported by the Ugandan government, for example, and the Kenyan government. If the youth in Uganda have to stand up and tell the government that you don't have to support a government that is killing young people who are the future of Africa.
Do you have empirical evidence that, in fact, that is what is happening?
It's not happening, and this is what I'm calling for, that the youth actually should work, support themselves. We should support young people in Kenya. How
yeah, but you are saying
they
that you are alleging, for example,
a free and fair election in
you
Kenya.
You are alleging that the government in South Sudan is killing people and is being supported by governments of Kenya and Uganda. Do you have empirical evidence on that?
Well, Uganda, the evidence is they have gone to war. They were fighting on the ground. Kenya actually have been arresting the opposition leader. Some of them have been, you know, deported from Kenya to Juba. They are now in Juba. We don't even know whether they exist in Juba prison with the government of South Sudan, or they are killed. There are people who have refugee status in Kenya, you know, which is actually putting Kenya into Kenya that we respect, and we see Kenya to be example in East Africa, tend to be something different by deporting refugees to where they can be killed immediately by the enemy.
I'm afraid that I'm being told to go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good afternoon, Obang Metho from Washington, D.C. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Dr. Chaka. How are you doing?
Hugely terrific. It's a very long time since I last heard your beautiful voice.
No, it's the same too, you know, but I always see you. Anyway, I would like to say thank you to you and then to brother and then Sister Wood. It's good to see you too. I think that, you know, I really, really moved by your statement. We need African leaders like you. We don't have to go look somewhere else. What you articulated there is what we are lacking. So from what I was just going to say, I think one of the biggest problems in Africa today is a lack of leadership. I agree. The second is also that these young people that this brother was talking about, the young people have to come together. These young people have to be organized. I think what the Africa needs is a grassroots. It is sad that when Sister Wood was talking, the role model of Africa they mentioned was the leaders that the founding of, you know, really of Africa, when they, in the, you know, Kwame Nkrumah, you know, Thomas Sankara, those are, you know, the leaders back then. In the last 10 years, they didn't mention anybody. I think that this is sad that we are bankrupt with the leadership. So I think what is needed, I agree, is a leadership. But that leadership has to come from the grassroots. And these young people also that have to be taught that what Africa needs today is not a leader of ethnicity or not a leader of a tribe, but a leader of a vision, and we lack that. You know, for instance, I work with the group in Ethiopia, and I'm an Ethiopian, and what I see there is, for example, head of the African Union based in Addis Ababa.
Thank you.
Addis Ababa is a country, you know, a government that really put lots of the boys of reason in jail. Addis Ababa is a country where the government set up by ethnicity. How can we accept it, Africa?
Thank you, my brother. Thank you. I think really your point is well spoken. We have these other compatriots who would like to come on board. I hope you don't mind. Abubakar from Ghana, you're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. You have a minute, please.
Good evening, Shaka.
Good evening. How are you, my brother?
I'm good. I'm Abubakar Issa Jallo, alias Tafa.
Thank you very much. You have 30 seconds. What's your question,
Thank
sir?
Thank you very much, Shaka. I'm yet to be told about one decision that African leaders have took in Addis Ababa that has been implemented across Africa. I'm yet to be told that decision. Every year, Shaka, they go there, they took PDM, and they come home, and the decision that they took in Addis Ababa, it will never be implemented. Mm-hmm. And every year, they keep going, coming back with nothing. So also for thank me, you. I'm beginning thank to believe it's less waste of time.
Thank you very much, my brother. Let's go to John from the Republic of South Sudan. Good evening, John. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. I'm afraid it looks like the line is bad. Let's go to Zach from Ghana. I see. And we can't get the line from South Sudan. Well, I'm afraid that I actually had to undercut the gentleman was talking from Ghana. Your reaction? You just heard, of course, the callers.
I think the callers are right on point, right, that we have this opportunity for the African Union to provide the leadership, and yet it seems like there's a coming together twice a year, there's a lot of celebrations and pictures, and then when you go back to, back home, then there's very little to show for it. And I think until we change that paradigm, right, where people are seeing results, are seeing actions coming out of these all various organs of the African Union, I think it would be very difficult to have the African Union live up to the potential that it can be, right? So I guess I want to applaud what the callers are saying. I think on the question of young people and ethnicity, clearly you have examples. The best one, I just came back from Senegal with Africans Rising and and their launch in Senegal. You had a group, Yanamar, young people from throughout the country representing all various ethnicities coming together to demand democracy in their country. Yeah. You have a similar grouping.
Senegal,
right?
And of course you have democracy in Senegal.
But they pushed it. They demanded it, right? Yes. And they're in the streets a month ago basically saying, you must respect us because we put you in office. We, the young people, put you in office, right?
That's why there's a saying that no society gets a leadership that it desires. Rather, you get what you deserve.
Well, clearly the leaders are looking to exploit ethnicity, but the young people are going beyond these ethnic lines to link hands in solidarity, often across religion, across ethnicity, across geographic boundaries. They are, I believe, the future of the continent. And so I think, as we think about the African Union, we have to think about better ways that it engages civil society, particularly these social movements that are now burgeoning throughout the continent.
Very interesting. Someone once said that no politics supersedes the politics of the stomach. What do you get out of that?
Well, this is the issue that we are facing, because most of our leaders they are doing stomach politics. They are not doing the politics that serve people and deliver service to the people. And actually, to come to the point of young people, I believe young people are there, they have an interest, but they also need education. That can be provided by the leaders who are now leading our country, for example.
What about civic education for people to become aware of their rights?
That is exactly like capacity building and a part of the normal of education. They need to be capacity built. They need to be trained so that they can be able to be prepared to take over the leadership and actually participate in the decision making.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Emilia Woods and Reith Muok Tang. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next, and tomorrow morning's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please, please remember to keep the African hopes alive.